south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You're probably wondering why you heard a repeat show last time, the show that was supposed to go out last Sunday. Well, you see, it was unavoidable because something happened to me that hasn't happened in 15, maybe 20 years now. I got hit with Montezuma's Revenge. Yep. On top of that, I had a technical problem with my equipment, but it really was old Montezuma that did me in. I ended up in bed a whole day and feeling like, well, you know, crap, for about two more days, and I'm still not exactly 100%. You know, 15 or even 20 years, I can't even remember, is a long time not to get stricken by that certain minor plague that seems to hit everyone, especially tourists coming down. In fact, it's kind of a rite of passage, especially with backpackers, who pretty much eat the cheapest street food they can get their hands on. In fact, I don't know of any gringo or expat who's been down to Latin America who hasn't reported an incident or two or ten. And it seems every little tourist or backpacker group has at least one person sick with it at any given time. Now, as for me, I have managed to avoid it for 15 or 20 years because I maintain certain strict rules and regs against eating street food. Because 80 to 90% of the time, Montezuma's Revenge is caused by contaminated street food. Not that it doesn't taste good, it's just that the after effects are, well, pretty horrendous. And if you're hanging with people, it's beyond embarrassing, too. Montezuma's Revenge is bad enough, but it's even worse when you have it at someone else's house, and thus glued to someone else's toilet. It's much worse when you're not sick at your own house. You probably know the feeling. Every time there's a knock at the door, it gives you all that much more reason to just want to die. So then was I lax? Did I drop my guard? Do I even know how I got it? Why did it happen to me? To a guy who takes all the necessary precautions, like, for example, never ordering any kind of beverage or drink with ice in it? How did it happen to me? The guy who at restaurants stealthily wipes the silverware down with napkins? A guy who never eats salads or mixed fruit dishes unless I clean and prepare them myself? Well, as luck would have it, it hadn't anything to do with eating restaurant food or street food, which I won't eat, or breaking those salad and fruit rules either. It happened because I went to a birthday party. And you know, sometimes if you're lucky, when you're out and about, you'll go to someone's house party and they'll have some coconuts on hand. Whole coconuts, unopened. I know now that was my downfall. Oftentimes you'll see whole coconuts at parties stuffed in the refrigerator. And when you slice off the top, they're the most refreshing, natural drink you can imagine. I've had coconut water like that hundreds of times. But this time, that coconut water, agua de coco, did me in. So how'd that happen? Was it naturally contaminated? Well, no, that can't really happen. It's hermetically sealed by nature, though it can go bad if it just sits around too long because, you know, coconuts want to become coconut trees. So eventually, after you've cut a big old coconut off the tree and it sits around for weeks, even months, even in its natural state, unopened, it'll start to naturally deteriorate and the water inside will start to ferment and go sour. That's all part of the process of germinating. And soon enough, it'll shoot roots out if it's sitting in the soil. Now, when the coconut water starts to go sour, you can't really tell by looking at it, not at first. When you taste it, it's not slightly sweet, it's slightly bitter. When it first starts going sour in the first day or two, you can still drink it, it won't get you sick, but it won't taste quite right. But that wasn't my problem. My coconut water tasted absolutely fine. But I knew there was a good chance I was going to be in trouble when I took a walk outside. That was about a half hour after I drank mine the usual way, through a straw. You cut a little hole, stick a straw in, and start slurping. Anyway, I walked out on that patio and saw the gardener slash maintenance guy chopping coconuts for people. If you've ever seen it done, they slice just about an inch off the top. It makes a hole through the hard shell and right through just a touch of the white meat layer, giving access to the water so you could pop a straw in. And that little opening's about as big as your thumb. So I stood there for a minute or two, and the maintenance guy said to me, "Would you like one?" I said, "I already had one inside. It was great." He said, "Have another." Then he winked and said, "And I'll toss a little rum in it for you, too." I said, "Okay, why not?" So he took his machete and expertly cleaved off a little silver dollar-sized button off the top of a coconut, and he put it down on the ground. And as I was about to go into the house to get a straw, I watched him cut three more and load them into a little wooden box to bring into the kitchen. Only thing was, and it kind of shocked me for a second, He stuck his dirty fingers in those holes as if they were bowling balls and dropped them in the box he was going to bring into the kitchen. And I stood there for a second thinking, oh no, every one of those pristine coconuts was contaminated with his slimy, grimy fingers. And then, worse yet, after he dropped those three coconuts into the box, he licked. Yep, I said licked with his tongue. The cocoa juice that was running down his fingers. And man, let me tell you, that's the perfect example of how and why you absolutely have to train up your maintenance guys, your cleaning ladies, your maids, anyone in your household that's handling food. Even if you feel funny about it and you think they know what they're doing, you have to assume they're very short on basic hygiene, and they are. Remember, your maintenance guy, cleaning lady, etc., most often live in a place that's only got water 6 or 8 hours a day, with dogs, driveway chickens, and cucarachas running in and out of the house at all times. Nothing wrong with that if you're used to it, but we're not. Our immune systems aren't used to that level of hygiene either. Look, you longtime listeners might remember the story I told about the disgusting habits of a certain cleaning lady who worked a couple of days a week at the house of one of my expat buddies. If you recall, me and my expat friend were sitting around shooting the breeze, and I saw out of the corner of my eye his cleaning lady go into the bathroom and clean the toilet with a certain green wash rag. They're called trapos down here. Wash rags are called trapos, T-R-A-P-O. And then a little later, I saw her in the kitchen wiping down the kitchen sink, the countertops, the faucets, etc., with that same towel she used to clean the toilet. And I said to my buddy, you know, you really have to train up your cleaning lady. She's using the same rag to clean the toilet as she is to clean the kitchen countertop and sink. And his eyes widened. He said, is that right? Shit. I said, correct. Shit. And that's one of the big errors I see gringos and expats make all the time. They assume their cleaning ladies, maintenance guys, etc. know exactly what they're doing. Well, they don't. Not as far as good hygiene goes, that's for sure. You have to train them up. Of course, that begs the question, why Latinos don't get sick all the time if that's the kind of hygiene practices they use? Well, it's Darwinism, you know. Natural selection. When the conquistadores came over in the 15th and 16th centuries, they brought smallpox, syphilis, and a number of other diseases with them. Wiped out half the population in the Americas, north and south. And in return, the locals gave the newcomers certain strains of Montezuma's revenge they'd never seen before. Parasites, amoebas, dysentery, etc. And if your immune system couldn't take it, you didn't make it. So now here in Latin America and in all third world countries, they've got populations whose immune systems are really tough and resilient against that kind of stuff. They had centuries to work it out, which is why we can get Montezuma's revenge at the drop of a hat, and they don't. So to make a short story long, that's why there wasn't an Expat File show on Sunday. Or at least I'm 99% certain of it. Thing is, though, no one else who went to that party got sick. But then again, I was the only gringo there. So let that be a lesson to you. Oh, and another thing about hygiene and food here in Latin America. One thing I've noticed since almost the very first time I've been down here and visited local Latin Americans in their own houses. They've got this bad habit, maybe it's not bad to them, but to us it is, of leaving food out on the counter or the stove all night. They'll cook a dinner, bake a cake, make a pasta or fruit salad. That's the worst, you know, because it's loaded with mayonnaise. And note, Latinos are addicted to mayonnaise. With North Americans, it's ketchup. With Latinos, it's mayonnaise. Anyway, it seems whatever they're making for dinner at night often remains overnight on the countertop or stove. Now, that's something my mother told me you should never do. Unless, of course, it's a cake or bakery items, then you cover and seal it nicely so insects can't get in it and you're okay. But as for meat, fish, lasagnas, casseroles, whatever, you name it, as my mother would say, it's got to go in the refrigerator. I know, there's times when you're cooking late at night and whatever you're cooking is really hot, so you leave it out overnight. But then it should always be well sealed and covered. Now, that might be the rare exception up by you, but down here, there's always something left out overnight in the kitchen. So then why do you think practically every single Latin American household I've ever been in, rich or poor, they've got a fly or cucaracha problem or both? Though you could say part of that is due to the fact that almost everyone here in Latin America has an undersized refrigerator. That's why most refrigerators down here are jam-packed. Too small a refrigerator for the size of the family. Unless it's an upper-middle-class person or someone with a lot of money who can afford a big double door with a water and ice dispenser. Considered high class here. Sure, you see those in appliance stores and in gringo and upper-middle-class and wealthy Latino homes. But most other families, probably 90% of them, have undersized refrigerators. And even if they look like they're full-size refrigerators, when you open them up, you find out they're only half as deep as your mom's old reliable Sears / Kenmore up in the States. You'll notice that once you hit an appliance store down here. You'll see when you open the door, they're just not that deep, and thus only hold about half as much. Of course, that means they're much cheaper too, but that's the point. But hey, you get what you pay for, right? Including this show. And if you're on the alert for things like that, I know it sounds strange, but I have an eye for the unusual. I think you've figured that out. Because, you know, when houses are built, at least as they've been built in the last 40 or 50 years anyway, there's a standard cutout in the kitchen for the refrigerator freezer, right? Well, I'll tell you, here in Latin America, it'll often be the case that you walk into someone's kitchen. Unless, again, you're talking about upper middle class or wealthy people, that makes up only about 5% of the population. Anyway, you'll see in that standard refrigerator cutout an undersized or even pint-sized unit, like a Whirlpool or Kenmore that hasn't grown up yet. Kind of throws the whole kitchen off balance to see a tiny refrigerator in a nice big opening. It'll be most often one of those oddball brands, too, you've never seen up in the States because they're made in Mexico or Brazil or Colombia. Funky names, too, like Teka, T-E-K-A, Altus, Ancor. But my favorite Latin American appliance brand name of all is M-A-B-E, pronounced maybe. That's perfect, right? Because maybe it's good, maybe it's not. Maybe it'll work, maybe not. M-A-B-E, maybe. Check it out. If you're renting a furnished apartment in Latin America, maybe you'll have one. Maybe not. Hey, you know, but anything you buy brand new looks nice. Which reminds me of the eternal irony with stainless steel products. As you probably know because you have some, there's nothing stainless about them. However, some appliance companies, some high-end appliance companies, even some of the more solid and dependable Korean, Chinese, and Japanese companies like LG, Samsung, etc., they have their sort of professional or high-end designer lines that have stainless steel finishes on them that really, truly live up to the hype. They don't stain. They're easy to clean and they don't mark up at all because they've taken the pains to include a more expensive alloy or somehow coated them with a thin, clear polyurethane, whatever. But when it comes to sinks, stainless steel is all the rage here in Latin America. Why? Because they're cheap. But cheap stainless steel means flimsy. And I'd say about 98% of all kitchen sinks are stainless steel. So eventually they all just stain up and look like crap. Except there is one brand I have noticed in high-end kitchens down here. It comes from Italy. It's called Visani, V-I-S-S-A-N-I. It's higher-priced stuff you see in high-end kitchen shops. Yep, they've got high-end kitchen shops and appliance shops throughout Latin America because they've got some very wealthy people living in very nice neighborhoods, so they want the best. Even so, you know, a very high-end brand is Kohler, right? You've heard of them. K-O-H-L-E-R. It's an American company, and most of this stuff anyway, I think, is still made in the United States in a little town called Kohler, Wisconsin. You know, when I was very young and I played golf pretty well, I actually played a tournament in a private golf club in Kohler, Wisconsin, owned by the Kohler family that makes the sinks. Now, Kohler is very high-end and high-priced. They have them in high-end kitchen shops here in Latin America, too, in expensive areas. And they even have an expensive line of stainless steel sinks. But they haven't conquered that stain problem like that company Visani has. And I'm only mentioning this because I've had something like 13 houses already here in Latin America. And in the ones that came with a stainless steel kitchen sink, I ripped them out and put in porcelain. A few of them were Kohler sinks. Very expensive down here, even if you're ordering from Amazon. Of course, you can order anything from Amazon, but then you gotta pay the shipping by weight. And being that porcelain sinks are baked onto cast iron, those things weigh a ton, and so with the shipping, you could pay up to $500 for a plain kitchen sink. So anyway, in my own houses and apartments, I always ended up ripping out the stainless steel kitchen sink. And if I built the places from scratch myself, I never included stainless steel sinks from the get-go. All except the one house, which had a Visani stainless steel sink in it. I'd never even heard of Visani. When I looked at the stainless steel sink, I thought, oh no, here's another one I gotta rip out. The place was 6 years old when I bought it, so it had some fairly new appliances and sinks, etc. And that sink, and I don't know why, it just was unstainable. Absolutely fantastically resistant to any kind of stains or scratches. So when I moved in, realizing it had been built 6 years earlier and it wasn't stained at all, I thought, man, I'm not gonna change this. What for? On top of that, it was solid as a rock. Because, you know, the second biggest problem to having a stainless steel sink is that they're stamped out of thin pieces of stainless steel, so they flex a bit. And you probably know this. Where the faucet is attached, they move. They give a bit. They don't feel near as secure as a porcelain sink. you could easily flex the faucet handle. Stainless steel sinks may look good when you first buy them, but eventually they start looking grungy and you know they're not really made for a lifetime of use. Anyway, there you have a few appliance and kitchen tips, so enough said about that. Oh, and I mentioned ordering sinks, etc. from Amazon. You can order anything from Amazon and they'll ship it to Latin America. That is, anywhere but Cuba and Venezuela. In fact, one of my gringo expat friends just ordered a bathtub. He showed me the order. It was $700. It weighed 70 pounds, so his shipping was around $200. Had Amazon ship it to his forwarding service in Miami. By the way, it's good to know as things weigh more and more, your freight forwarding service will charge you less by the pound. They've got a sliding scale. For a pound, they might charge you $5 or $6. But when it's over 50 pounds or 75 or 100 pounds, they might only charge you $2 or $3 a pound. Because some of the big stuff and big boxes might come by boat, which is cheaper instead of air. Oh, and by the way, I have a couple of expat buddies who live in Peru. I'll talk about Peru, I think, on the next show. Since an amazingly tragic thing has just happened there. They voted a dyed-in-the-wool communist as their new president. And anybody there who's got a business or has some money at all is shaking in their boots. Because in his political platform, he comes right out and says he's going to nationalize private businesses for the good of the masses. Just like, guess where? The old Soviet Union, Venezuela, and Cuba. You know, I've been to Peru quite a few times. I've never recommended the place except to visit Machu Picchu. That's a must-see. And last time I was there, I think it was about right before COVID, about a year and a half ago. I was at my expat buddy's house, and he was ordering something from Amazon. So just know, all you listeners out there, Amazon will ship anywhere. Turns out my buddy had a Miami mailbox courier that forwarded his stuff directly to Lima. Well, it turns out it was such a hassle dealing with the aduana and customs, the courier service quit doing it. I'm sure a few others have popped up. I'll have to ask him about it. But get this. When I was there last time, he ordered a $32 replacement battery for his HP computer. The computer was a few years old. It was doing fine, but the battery was only charging for like an hour and a half, slowly dying. So he ordered a new one on Amazon. $32. And when he went to his cart to check out on Amazon, there was free shipping to his Miami freight forwarding company, but there was an additional charge on the last line of his checkout statement, $102. And there was a question mark on a box to check out if you wanted to know what that was for. It was required by the Peruvian aduana, that'd be import tax authorities, on every single Amazon item coming through to Peru. So even before Peru voted in a commie president, the Peruvian tax and aduana authorities absolutely gouged everyone using Amazon. It's not just Amazon either, it's for any product you order online, like Alibaba or eBay too. So my buddy had an extra $102 tacked on to his purchase of $30, and that's for an item that weighs less than 1 pound. I hate to see what they charge it for big stuff. Now, just last night, when I was thinking about what I was going to say about Peru today, I went to my own Amazon account, went to the vitamin page, clicked on quercetin, $29 for a bottle of 120, and I changed the shipping destination to Peru just to see how much it was going to cost. And just like a year and a half ago, a $102 charge popped up in the checkout window. That's $102 extra for a $29 item. So again, that's another reason I prefer Central America over South America. The shipping, freight, and taxes to import anything to South America is 2 to 3 to 5, even 10 times more in some odd cases than it is to ship to Central America. And that's reflected in all the stores and tiendas that sell things that have been imported. And why, for example, in Brazil, an iPhone costs 2 to 3 times as much as it does in the States or in Central America. But just wait. Inflation is rearing its ugly head in a big way now. You found that out last time you went to the grocery store, right? Prices will go much higher worldwide. Of course, the official word out of the U.S. government from Tweety Bird Janet Yellen is that inflation will be minimal and temporary. Kind of like her brain power, minimal and temporary. Well, she's another snaggletooth lying pusball that I'd definitely punch in the face if I ever saw her in a checkout line. I mean, come on, here's a woman who gets duped millions of dollars for speaking engagements, yet she can barely cluck out a sentence. Speaking of BO and terrible hygiene, it appears from the obvious shade of green when she smiles that she hasn't yet learned how to brush her twisted teeth. Though I understand from DC insiders, her minimal hygiene is slightly better than Hillary's, who Washington insiders say, if the air turns suddenly rancid, Hillary's in the building or the wind's just shifted off of the dump. And I do mean that in the most loving Christian sort of way. Now, before I get on to the next topic, and you're really going to like this one, I want to comment on the nearby construction. You may have heard the sounds coming from the show in the last couple of weeks. You see, every morning at around 8 o'clock, a crew of about 6 or so people arrive at the construction site next door. They're up to their ears building walls, laying tile, doing carpentry, plumbing, and electric wiring. Every day I hear those guys. I overhear some private conversations too, and I see them walking in and out of the building, taking their breaks, checking their phones, telling jokes, picking on each other, having a lot of laughs. And really, as dirty, as scummy, and dusty as they get in construction work, they're having a great old time. They love their jobs, even when they're stuck out in the hot sun on the roof or covered in muck. That's one thing I got to say about Latin American workers. Unlike workers up in the first world, who I believe 90% of them don't like their jobs and would much rather be doing something else. The Latin American working class down here reminds me of my dad's generation. They were just glad to have steady jobs, because their parents, our grandparents, went through the uncertainty of the Great Depression. And that's something you'll notice the longer you live down here in Latin America. The genuine happiness of most workers. Though one of the unfortunate things I've seen in the last maybe 2 or 3 years is that it seems every young worker under 25, and that under 25 crowd's usually always the gophers and the grunt workers, well, these days, nearly all of them are wearing their pants at half-mast. Yeah, they're all heavily influenced by the brain-dead, ass-crack American rappers. Though, don't get me wrong, none of them have that rotten rapper attitude going. But they absolutely have glommed on to that most horrible fashion trend, ass-crack pants. I know I've mentioned this before, but hey, just be aware of the fact if you're remodeling, doing a building project, or have some repair work to be done, when the repair guys come and there's a guy under 25, you'll either want to laugh or cry. Now, I have no idea if you're building a house up in the States or doing some remodeling, if ass-crack pants boys show up on your job. If I was a boss, I wouldn't allow it. But maybe up by you, if the boss or the owner who's paying for the project thought about laying down some proper rules of job etiquette, he'd be afraid to, fearing cancellation and the Twitter mob being labeled a bigot or a white supremacist racist. Now, imagine if you've got young daughters in the house and there were guys walking around with their asses hanging out of their pants. So I asked a couple of job foremen down here, older guys, who say to me they believe it's pretty disgusting too, but as long as they do the job and nobody complains, they just let it slide. In fact, just a few days ago, I was talking to a guy whose title is Maestro. That would be Master Builder, a guy in charge of an entire work crew. When I asked him about his 3 young boy workers in their ass-crack pants, he didn't even answer. The look on his face said it all. He shook his head and gave a wince, like my dad used to do in the 70s when he saw a hippie with long hair and John Lennon glasses driving a Volkswagen bus. He'd have a look on his face that explicitly said, "The hell is this world coming to, Johnny?" Well, we know what happened to that generation of hippies who later became toxically indulgent parents and ended up in Congress, right? America has become, well, gutted. And one of the main reasons so many Plan Bs exist. Now, I don't have kids and I might never have them. But if I ever had one or one lived under my roof, there'd be no ass-crack pants allowed. Oh, by the way, that maestro, that master builder I was talking about, when discussing his ass-crack pants boy workers, he did comment. He said, "I don't know how or why their wives and girlfriends would ever allow it." He said, "If my kid tried to wear his pants like that, that'd just make his ass all the more tempting to kick." Or something like that. He'd said it in very fast Spanish. Now, I'm sure you've all heard the news that El Salvador is the first country in the world to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender and currency. That means the banks will have to accept it. All the stores and tiendas will too. It'll run parallel to the country currency, which is the U.S. dollar. You knew that, right? For the last 20 years, it's been the U.S. dollar. An ever-depreciating funny money currency itself. You knew that too. Now, understandably, banks and financial institutions are totally pissed off about this. Why? Because it takes the control, the power, the usual gouge, the slice of the pie, their cut away from them. Question is, how and why did it happen first in the world to little El Salvador? Well, here's the scoop you won't hear in the lamestream news. Who will only tell you how bad it is for society in the world? You know, kind of like how the lamestream tells us if we don't get vaxxed, we're going to endanger the entire planet. You know, for the last couple of years, part of my seminar has been in El Salvador, both in the capital and on the Pacific beachside, where even a couple of years ago, you'd see little Bitcoin signs everywhere. What you might not realize is that the Pacific coast of El Salvador is a world-class Olympic surfing area, with surfers coming in from all over the world. As mentioned, it's one of the stops on my seminar. That was the seed that started the beachfront Bitcoin revolution in El Salvador just a couple of years ago already, though no one ever heard of it outside the international surfing community, and of course if you visited one of those little towns on the beach yourself. Now, one of the first things you might hear is that Bitcoin transactions cost a few bucks, so how can you buy a cup of coffee or a soda pop with Bitcoin? And poor Salvadorians, 60 to 70% of them, who don't even have a bank account. They'll never use Bitcoin. The transaction fees alone will kill them. Well, that just means you haven't studied the subject or you haven't been down here to see how they're doing it. Turns out, Salvadorians can switch back and forth from Bitcoin to dollars using what's called a Strike wallet that's been around for a while and what's called a Bitcoin Beach wallet, which was developed by a bunch of wealthy crypto surfers who've been coming down to El Salvador beaches for 15 or so years now. So people keep sending money back and forth between the Bitcoin Beach wallet and Strike wallet, depending if they want to use Bitcoin or dollars or vice versa. And the fees in the low cents, almost close to nothing. There aren't transaction fees of dollars, as most people who aren't in the know seem to think. So they've developed an excellent workaround that allows a person making $200 or even $300 a month to use Bitcoin for practically everything. It's what you might call a bootstrap trading engine that's been developed specifically by these Bitcoin surfers. Now, one of these Bitcoin Beach surfer crypto guys, his name is Mike Peterson, who is now personal friends with the president of El Salvador. You gotta wonder, how'd that happen? Well, here's how it started. Bitcoin Beach is a project in El Salvador. They set out to show that Bitcoin could be used day-to-day by everyone as a long-term investing strategy for people who have never invested in anything, except maybe their own little tiendas, houses, and farms, because 60% of them don't even have bank accounts. And this group of surfing crypto guys set out to prove even the poorest of poor could have empowerment in their lives and get a financial education out of it too. The thing is, you see, if you visited those little beach towns before 3 years ago, before Bitcoin hit, you'd see lots and lots of tiny local businesses that wouldn't accept credit cards because small business owners had no credit or no financial history and could not qualify for merchant accounts and therefore could never qualify to accept Visa or MasterCard. So it started out as a project principally to benefit people who were cut out of the banking system, including hundreds of small business owners. Because let's face it, when you're an international surfing destination with people coming from all over the world, they come not with cash, but with surfboards and credit cards. And if you're a small mom-and-pop grocery store or restaurant and don't accept credit cards, you're SOL. By the way, Salvador's President Bukele, who got this whole thing rolling, went out of his way many times to say that the inspiration behind him ramming the Bitcoin as a currency legislation was all because of what was happening at Bitcoin Beach. But too bad we're getting towards the end of the show now. Next show, I'm going to pick up where we left off. I promise you're going to hear things they'll never talk about in lamestream media because the banks, who are in absolute fear of cryptocurrencies, are in control of the lamestream media narrative. But you knew that already, right? And if you didn't, you can just keep dancing to the music on the deck of the Titanic. Just keep humming that lame brain refrain, "Don't worry, be happy." South
of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.